coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in again for Tom Clark. And as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. And as usual, Zorba, we have a few cool topics to talk about today.
Yes, we're going to talk about food, eating, depression, what you eat. Can that really affect your mood? Or does your mood affect what you eat? Some interesting data and research. And then we're going to talk about millennials, Gen Xers, whether or not they're as healthy as boomers. What's going wrong with what they're doing with their life and what can they do to correct it?
Interesting stuff. And what's the special recipe today?
You bet. Mediterranean stuffed chicken. It's got three fabulous words that I like. First of all, it's got Mediterranean. I love the word Mediterranean. Then it has stuffed. That means there's good stuff in it. Of course, stuff, good stuff. Kind of makes sense. And then it's got chicken, which is now America's favorite protein.
That's right.
There's more chicken consumed now than beef on a per capita basis. And this is a great recipe.
800-462-7413 is the number to call, where you can leave a voicemail any time of the day or night with your question for Zorba. And then stay tuned. You just might hear yourself on an upcoming episode of the show. That's 800-462-7413. I'm also happy to announce later in the show, we'll hear from Chef Tom Clark in his state-of-the-art magic kitchen.
That's right. Super chef, super chef Tom Clark in his magic imaginary kitchen. That's right. The virtual chicken,
imaginary.
The virtual kitchen, not the virtual chicken, the virtual kitchen. Those words are kind of like together. Chicken, kitchen. Anyway, we'll hear from Tom.
That sounds great. All right, let's kick things off with a caller now who lives in the town where the hair metal band Skid Row recorded their first record. Are you a Skid Row fan, Zorba? Have you heard of Skid Row?
Well, I've heard of Skid Row in terms of what Skid Row is.
Right, not the band.
But not
though.
The band.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, good hair metal band, Skid Row. All right, let's hear now from Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
My question is, after receiving second dose, I received Pfizer. I didn't get sick afterwards, so I'm kind of concerned that my immune system isn't working as good as I heard. If you get sick afterwards, that means that your immune system really kicked in and it's building up these antibodies. So put my mind to rest. Thanks. Bye.
I have to tell you, I have had so many questions about that on radio, on television that I do, on the columns that I write, on the Facebook pages. Gee, I didn't get sick with my shots. Does that mean my immune system isn't working? And the answer is no, it does not mean your immune system is not working. It's so funny because it's like, my goodness, if I get a side effect from something, I worry because it's actually causing trouble. We've gone to the opposite idea, you know, that if it doesn't cause you trouble, then it must not be working. So now, did you get sick after your second shot, Carl?
No, I didn't. There was a little, there was like maybe a half day where I felt a little off, but I wouldn't say I was really completely out of commission or anything.
Right. And so the answer is no, you don't have to get sick to actually know that you're actually getting good immunity from the shots. Many people, the vast majority of the people, have absolutely no symptoms. And we know, once again, the shots are 95% effective. 2 weeks after the booster, you can go and do just about anything. And the risk that you're going to end up in the hospital is minimal, and the risk that you're going to end up in the ICU is practically close to zero. These, the Pfizer and the Moderna and even the J&J are so much better than your average influenza vaccines that it's absolutely remarkable. So I just want to remind people, especially those who are sitting on the fence and wondering what to do, the shots work. I had my wife got shots. My children got shots. I believe in the shots. Not only do I believe it, the data is there. The risk from the shots, serious side effects are minimal. You are 10 times more likely to be struck by lightning than have a serious side effect to these shots. And I don't know about you, but when thunderstorms come around, I might stay inside, but I don't worry about being struck by lightning.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call, leave a voicemail anytime for the show. And let's keep those voicemails rolling in, Zorba. Here's a caller now in El Paso, Texas.
I'm looking for a good diet to feed the kidney. I want to make my kidneys super healthy. What can you do? What can you recommend?
Well, we actually have diets that are for people who have renal dysfunction, kidney dysfunction. And if you go and you Google diet kidney care, you'll end up getting a diet that basically is low in sodium. We know sodium isn't good for your kidneys, that has the right amount of potassium. Potassium on the whole is good, but you don't want to have too much potassium. So you want to look fruits and vegetables. You want to eat a banana a day, but you don't want to eat 4 or 5 bananas a day. You want a diet that's lower in phosphorus, because often that's an issue too. And once again, if you Google, you'll get to that information. And those are for people whose kidney function is less than normal. Now, for those people who have normal kidney function, the real issue is just stay hydrated. And that means about 8 glasses of water a day. Look at your urine. If it's tea colored, if it's not concentrated, you're doing a good job. But for all of us, staying away from salt is a good idea. Not that you have to go to a low sodium diet, but just stop eating as much sodium as the average American eats. And as we know, most of the salt comes from prepared food that you buy in the store, buy in a container, buy in a can. Typical Campbell's soup has lots of sodium in. Read the label. Stay away from sodium.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave a message with a question for Dr. Zorba to answer. And we're going to get back to those voicemails in just a bit. But first, Zorba, tell us about comfort food and new research out on how certain foods can affect our mental health.
Well, this is really interesting research. So first of all, you know, the real issue is, are there foods that are good for you and foods that are not? Well, we know that generally junk food obviously is not good for us. And we know that fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, eating the right type of protein, the right type of food that has basically good nutrition in it, dense nutrition, is going to be better. And the real question is whether or not the comfort foods that we eat when we're not feeling good and stressed, whether or not that actually causes a problem. And this is a whole element of something called nutritional psychology, that what we eat is what we are. Now, we know, obviously, Carl, I mean, what do you think happens if you eat too much sugar?
It's not good.
And it's not good for many things. Now, how much sugar do you think the average American eats a year?
A year? What is the measurement here? Cups or what? Gallons?
Yes. The average American eats 60 pounds of sugar a year.
Wow.
If you look at how much sugar consumption we have, it's 60 pounds, a lot of it through drinks. And the real issue is when we look at sugar, when we look at fat, when we look at salt, whether or not it makes a difference to the biome of our gut. In other words, more and more we understand that gut biome influences health. And it looks like there was a particular study, and it looked like people who have depression, their depression tended to be worse in this particular study when they ate sugary, salty foods, junk foods, you know, chips, soda, and everything else. Their depression actually got worse. And when they ate fresh fruits and vegetables, their depression and their anxiety actually got better. So it might be that when you're not feeling good, those comfort foods are not going to make you more comfortable. And what it really means is you've got to go back to eating nutritionally healthy foods. And I think this is really kind of a major step forward. You know, we haven't, I hate to say it, but this is public radio. We don't think of our excrement. Now, we can say the word poop. There are other words we can't say to begin with the letter S. But we can say excrement. We don't think of our gut and what comes out of our gut as really being important. And more we're finding it's really important. And it may be important for mental health.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. Leave your question for Dr. Zorba. That's 800-462-7413. Let's get back to more of those voicemails. Here is a caller from Jacksonville, Florida.
I've been doing a lot of research on psychedelics and how it helps with depression and anxiety. And I wanted to see if there was any new information or if you had any information that I haven't heard of yet. I've specifically been doing a lot of research on psilocybin and on ayahuasca ceremonies. I've heard that it can actually help to do away with depression and anxiety, and that's really what I'm looking for. Thanks a lot.
You know, there are so many interesting aspects to this. So Carl, you know, Do you know who Timothy Leary is, or you just said that generation and you sort of heard his name?
I've read about Timothy Leary. LSD experiments.
Well, Timothy Leary, do you know what he was doing at Harvard originally when this whole started?
I do not. No. What was he doing?
He was a Harvard professor. And guess what he was studying back in the 60s?
I don't know. Depression?
Psychedelics. He was not studying depression. And LSD is actually what they were beginning to look at, psilocybin and LSD. LSD was actually, guess when Sandoz, which was a pharmaceutical company that's merged into a bunch of other companies, guess how what they thought LSD was going to be good for?
The military?
No, migraine headaches.
Oh, really?
It's an ergot derivative, and they were looking for a new medication for migraine headaches. Imagine their surprise when they had volunteers who took the headache, the LSD, and found out not only did their migraine headache disappear, but their brain also went into a different spot. And they said, oh, my God, I don't think we can really produce this for migraine headaches, right?
I said military because I had read about them testing LSD on soldiers at some point.
Oh, they tested on soldiers. They did a whole bunch of things. And part of the issue was to see whether or not this actually would be useful for insight and many, many other issues. But Timothy Leary got a hold of it. Timothy Leary, and then Alpert was his name, can't remember his first name, who then became Ram Dass, then was also a clinical psychologist at Harvard. And what they did was they started giving it to all these kids, young college students. They started abusing it. And the federal government came and it said, whoa, you can't do research. We're going to label this as dangerous as heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, heroin kills people, right?
Right.
LSD does not kill people. Now, we could argue that LSD definitely can cause psychiatric disturbances in people, but they put it in the class, which means you can't do research on psychedelics. In other words, psilocybin, LSD, you got to jump through like 10 hoops to get research, whereas we can do research on opioids willy-nilly. I mean, they're major, major issues. So a number of researchers really are doing interesting research now, are jumping through all the hoops and doing microdosing of psilocybin and whether or not the microdosing will make a difference in depression, which is what our caller thinks about. Now, how many people you think, Carl, are actually not cured but treated effectively with antidepressants?
Just give a guess. 50-50.
Yeah, it's actually probably even a little bit better. It's probably 60-40.
Okay.
And if you add two antidepressants, you might go up to 70, maybe 70, 75%, but you're nowhere near 100%. And for people with severe depression, we give ECT, electroshock therapy, where we give, you know, electric shocks to the brain, which they tried to do away with in California. They actually had it as an amendment, and the psychiatrist and the people who are depressed, who were basically helped by it, said, wait a minute, we want to be able to use this. And that got struck down as an amendment to their constitution. But what they've discovered now is micro doses of psilocybin for some people appear to work with refractory depression. Very, very important. And there's a drug called ketamine. Have you heard of ketamine?
Isn't that horse tranquilizers?
No, it's Special K. Have you heard of Special K?
Is that like cornflakes?
No. But if you've not heard of Special K.
I have heard of Special K, yes.
Yeah, Special K is ketamine. I mean, Obviously Special K is a cornflake. But Special K.
I'm trying to cover myself here.
I got it. But Special K is because ketamine would put you in to a quick LSD-like situation, which would last for a short period of time. And they're actually using Johnson & Johnson, I believe it's Johnson & Johnson, has actually developed a ketamine spray, which can be used in certain clinics, which is helping people with refractory depression. In other words, it's not a prescription that you can take home, but it's a prescription that you can actually use in the clinic in a microdose manner that may be helping with depression. This is really interesting. So you've got Special K, ketamine, that's not what they call it. I can't remember the trade name. You've got psilocybin, which is being used, and these drugs might be helpful. And we've got to allow research to be able to use them, because there are people with depression that are simply, you know, they're simply not cured. Now, I've got a question for you. When you were younger, did you know of anyone who was, quote, hospitalized for a nervous breakdown?
Not personally, no.
But did you ever hear of someone had a nervous breakdown?
Yeah, you'd hear about that.
people who had a nervous breakdown were people who often had catatonic depression. In other words, they had a depression where they just weren't talking to people at all. And that was called, for most of that time, that was, quote, a nervous breakdown. So there's some people where our standard medicines don't work, and psilocybin might be the answer. And the federal government should open it up so it can be tested by qualified researchers and get off their shtick and stop making it so difficult. And that's what they should do.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime, leave a message. But before we take a break, Zorba, it's time to get social. This is the segment where we feature what our listeners are writing on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. This is called Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
All right, Zorba, on a recent show, we were talking about the benefits of eating oatmeal, and you mentioned that you're not a huge oatmeal fan, and so you asked you asked for suggestions. You asked
that
for listeners.
That is true. I am not a big oatmeal fan, but
you asked our listeners for suggestions for ways to make oatmeal a little more palatable, and as always, our listeners have delivered the mush. Here is just a sampling of responses we got from our wonderful listeners. And by the way, Quaker Oats pitchman Wilford Brimley, he'd be smiling through this segment right now, right through his mustache.
Did he also call in?
No, he passed away recently, a little while ago. But yeah, I think he would have maybe if he heard our show. That would have probably made my day. I know that. First, Jerry says on Facebook, every day I have raisins, frozen cranberries, chia seeds, ground flax, toasted wheat germ, ooh, cinnamon, and one large sliced banana. I often add soy milk or homemade unflavored skyr. S-K-Y-R. Have you heard of skyr?
No, I have no idea what that is. Mm-mm.
It is kind of like a yogurt. It's from Iceland. It's a dairy product with, you know, active cultures in it. Just like
you know something? That sounds like something I would eat.
That sounds really, right?
Textures, taste, very interesting, with oatmeal essentially being the skeleton upon which these really good foods are. Yeah, I'd eat that. That's something I would order in a restaurant. I'm sure I would enjoy it. Yeah.
Okay. Like it. Good. Tom in Duluth, Minnesota says, honey with turmeric mixed in and berries when I have them. Sounds pretty good. Jane in Tucson, Arizona, oatmeal is not my favorite, but I do add oatmeal to my famously delicious meatballs.
Ooh.
I'm sure the oatmeal makes them a little bit healthier. I've never heard of that. Have you heard of that?
Oh, no, oatmeal no. When my mother made meatballs, she put oatmeal in her meatballs. I forgot all about it. She did. Your mother didn't?
Maybe she did. I guess I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, no. My mother put oatmeal in the meatballs. And when she made hamburgers, she also put oatmeal in hamburgers. And I have not thought about that in over 50 years because I'm an old guy. And so in 50 years, I still got 23 years after that to go back beyond the 50. So sorry.
I'll keep going here. There's a couple more. Carol Ann in Clarence, New York writes,
I've been to Clarence.
You've been to Clarence?
You bet. I've been to Clarence. My agent got my book published, The Longevity Code, Your Personal Prescription for a Longer, Sweeter Life. Lived in Clarence. I went there. Clarence is just outside of Buffalo. I've been there maybe 3 or 4 times. I have a great relationship with the people in Buffalo. I've spoken there. I love Buffalo, and I like Clarence, but I love downtown Buffalo a lot.
Carol Ann in Clarence says, I love oat and buckwheat groats.
Oh, ooh.
Cooked in my Instant Pot. Their chewy texture is delicious, hot right out of the pot or later cold. Perfect substitute for rice or white flour pasta.
Absolutely a great idea.
She says, yeah. I was never a fan of oatmeal until I began cooking oat groats. What are groats?
Buckwheat groats are something that is traditionally served Penny's grandmother served buckwheat groats, and it was called kasha, and it was buckwheat groats, usually with some cut up like peppers that might have been in it, or peas, and also it would have a little pasta, little bow tie pasta. And I actually made it. You can buy it in the store, and it's called buckwheat groats, and obviously comes from buckwheat, which is some kind of a grain. And I had not made it for years. And about a month ago, I found a box in the basement that I bought years ago, still good because it was sealed. And I put it, it takes a long time to cook. You got to cook it for like 30 minutes, and then it has to sit for 30 minutes, and it's really good. And frankly, we should be eating more of them because they're a wonderful alternative to traditional rice. They kind of have the texture of wild rice and sort of brown rice, but different.
Wow. That is all new stuff to me right there. I'd never heard of that. Finally, Zorba, a listener named, maybe you know her, Dee Dee Pastor is her name. She wrote on her dad's Facebook page.
The other Dr. Pastor.
There you go. Just be
clear of that. The other Dr. Pastor, yes.
Yep. Dee Dee wrote, thanks for the shout out. We eat a lot of oatmeal. I'm sure you can attest to that.
That's right. She's the one, whenever I see her, that actually makes this delicious oatmeal dish. And she really does it. When she makes it, I do eat it and I like it. But somehow I'm lazy and I don't make it. But you know, whenever she shows up, she does the cooking. I love it.
Thanks for all those great oatmeal variations. We're going to try all of them, maybe. Would you like to hear a highly trained radio host read your carefully typed out thoughts on the air? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And I did want to quickly mention, we do read all the emails we get. Thanks for sending them. And we really appreciate it.
We do. We like them all. We don't answer them all by any means.
We wish we could.
We wish we could. But, you know, time being of an essence, life goes on.
More of your calls to come. We'll be dropping into Tom Clark's Kitchen of Wonders.
Legendary.
For the recipe.
Legendary. You never say Tom Clark and kitchen without the word legendary, because it is legendary.
That's right. We'll also read some more listener emails. All of that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now, this is the moment all you foodies out there have been waiting for, the moment where we get to peel back the curtain and get a rare glimpse into celebrity chef Tom Clark's magical kitchen. So let's head over there now, where he and Zorba are busy putting together a very tasty recipe for Mediterranean stuffed chicken.
Carl, thank you, I guess. They make me do this recipe hoping that someday I'll quit doing those frozen dinners and actually real food. So maybe this is the day, Zorba.
Yeah, you're the man. You're the man behind the curtain.
Yep.
Anyway, this is a chicken. You like chicken, Tom, don't you?
Well, yeah, sure. Sure. Who doesn't like chicken?
Well, that's it. And chicken has become, I mentioned before, America's favorite protein. I mean, there's more. We now consume more chicken than beef. Did your mother serve chicken very much when you were a child?
Hey, chicken, beef, what else? That's about it.
That's it. But I mean, my mother, the most she made fried chicken occasionally. But when I was six, she made boiled chicken. She would give me boiled chicken.
Oh, my goodness.
And oh, my goodness is right. Let me tell you, we are not going to have a recipe for Rhoda Pastor's boiled chicken. Our dish does not have boiled chicken skin in. It's a really good dish for Mediterranean stuffed chicken. Okay, so start out with 4 8-ounce skinless boneless chicken breasts.
4 8-ounce skinless boneless chicken breasts.
That's right, that's right. A teaspoon of oregano, a good oregano, such as, you know, a good Hungarian oregano. 1 teaspoon of oregano.
Little tea oregano.
Or Italian oregano. 1/2 teaspoon of a good paprika, Hungarian paprika.
1/2 little tea paprika.
1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 little tea salt.
1/4 teaspoon of black pepper.
1/4 little tea black pepper.
1 cup of baby spinach chopped.
1 cup of baby spinach chopped.
Yeah, do not use frozen. It's not going to taste as good. Got to be made. It's got to be fresh. Half a cup of crumbled feta cheese.
Half cup crumbled feta cheese.
Do you like the taste of feta cheese?
I don't know.
That's why we call this your legendary kitchen. It's a legend of its own. It's a Greek cheese. Moving on. Quarter cup of chopped roasted red peppers. And you can buy those in the store in a bottle.
Quarter cup chopped roasted red peppers.
A tablespoon of freshly chopped basil.
Big tea, freshly chopped basil.
Two tablespoonfuls of Kalamata olives. Those are Greek olives. Mm-hmm. Two garlic cloves minced. That's right. And two tablespoonfuls of olive oil. We're going to use some olive oil. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's make it.
Okay.
Preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Now, pat the chicken dry with paper towels. Throw the paper towels away. Very important because remember, chicken, we always worried about salmonella. Wash your hands after you actually work with the chicken. Make a horizontal slit in the thickest part of the chicken breast to create a pocket, making sure you don't cut it through all the way because remember, it is stuffed chicken breast. Then season the outside of the chicken breast with oregano, paprika, salt, and pepper. Rub the seasoning on both sides of the chicken. You can also rub a little bit in that pocket if you want to, but definitely on both sides of the chicken. Then in a small bowl, combine the spinach, feta cheese, roasted red peppers, some basil, olives, garlic, and a tablespoonful of olive oil, one tablespoon. Stuff the mixture inside the pocket of the chicken breast. Use a couple of toothpicks then to close that pocket. Take the remaining olive oil, heat it in a large oven-safe skillet. Cast iron skillet would be the one that I would have in my house. And then add the stuffed chicken breast to that. Sear it until golden brown, about 3 minutes on each side. So you're searing the outside of the chicken, then transfer that skillet into the oven. Just take it, put it into the oven that's at 400 degrees and cook it uncovered for about 15 to 18 minutes until the chicken is fully cooked through. And it's wonderful. It looks really good. You serve it on the plate, maybe with wonderful greens. Maybe you have some wild rice on the side with that, a nice glass of red wine. And then invite three other people over to your house, two, three other people. Have a party.
Are you done? I was kind of nodding off then. So.
I guess it was so long. I am done with the recipe. And I hope you took it all down, Tom, right? Did you do that? You wrote it all down?
I've committed it to memory. I've got it.
That's exactly it. Well, since we no longer use the mail, you know, we don't have first-class stamps, you have to go on our website, sorbapastor.org, and get this recipe. It really is a good recipe.
Yeah. Well, I'm here for a few minutes, and I'm really tired, so I guess we'll throw it back to Carl now, and he can take it from here. Carl, go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Tom. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime to leave a question for Dr. Zorba. Let's get back to those voicemails now. Here is a listener from right here in Madison, Wisconsin.
My question is, my daughter has two sons, 4 and 2, and has changed from giving them milk at breakfast to water due to concerns of constipation. These kids do get good calcium, but I'm concerned as children need lots of sources of good calcium for bone growth at this early age. Just wondered if Dr. Zorba had any concerns about that and growing up children. Thank you for your time and help. I will hang up. Bye now.
Absolutely. Milk is great for kids. Now, we can have arguments about it. You know, we have the anti-milk lobby and that says, no, not beyond a year of life. Why are we giving kids milk? But frankly, if you tolerate milk, if you're lactose intolerant, that's different. And of course, you can give Lactaid, which is lactase concerning milk, or rather containing milk. But basically, milk is good. It's a food source. It has protein. You know, having milk, I mean, you don't want to have 4 glasses of milk like they talked about when I was a kid, but it's an excellent source of calcium. And from a constipation point of view, if your child is constipated, what you do is in a natural way, you handle it by giving them more fresh fruits and vegetables. Raisins are excellent for constipation. You can look up, if you Google kids and constipation and food, you will get a whole bunch of different foods that you can give your kids, including prune juice, which, by the way, tastes delicious and is really good for kids with constipation. And if that fails, talk to your doctor about it. There are other things that can be done. There actually are medications. But I would not remove calcium for the diet because of constipation. I would add whole grains, fresh fruits and vegetables, and improve their diet with other foods rather than restricting their diet with less nutritional good stuff.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call if you'd like to leave a question for Dr. Zorba anytime. Let's keep those voicemails coming. Here's a caller in Iowa.
Hey, this is Hippie Dave from Iowa. Hey, I was in the grocery store the other day looking at tuna steaks, and after the ingredients, it says treated with carbon monoxide. Is that stuff safe? It kills people, don't it? I don't know. Let me know. Bye.
Well, I'll tell you what they do when they actually seal these things. If they seal foods like tuna, and they seal it in an environment that has oxygen, then it deteriorates because it's not a sterile product. And basically, the oxygen then will feed on any bacteria that are on the surface. So if they seal it in carbon monoxide, in other words, when they actually process it, they obviously have a closed, it's closed. They put carbon monoxide gas within the processing, then bacteria do not grow and it stays fresher. So yes, if you're in your garage, you turn on your car, you have carbon monoxide, it's going to kill you. You open up the tuna steak and the carbon monoxide is like minuscule amount. And frankly, we are around carbon monoxide all the time. If you smoke cigarettes, one of the things you inhale, carbon monoxide. If we want to test to see if you're a cigarette smoker, one of the things we check in your bloodstream is carbon monoxide, because it means you're down there. If you burn charcoal, if you burn, in your fireplace wood, you are around carbon monoxide. It's large doses in an enclosed space that will kill you. In the tuna steak, it's going to protect it and actually make the food fresher.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, we get so many calls from our wonderful listeners who have so many great questions. And we also get calls from helpful listeners who just want to share a comment or a health tip they might have. So we made some time for those listeners in a segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do. We appreciate it very much. First up, Zorba, let's hear from a caller in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
A fellow called in about carpal tunnel, and he was a carpenter, and he was asking questions about it as a young guy. And I know that I had a pretty bad experience, at least myself, with carpal tunnel when I was younger, doing woodworking. And I was using a hammer with a steel shank. And someone told me to get rid of that steel hammer and get a hammer with a good wood shaft, the shank, and your problem will go away. And it did. Just a couple of weeks later, it was gone. I wore a brace and took some NSAIDs and that kind of thing, but that steel shafted hammer was what was the whole problem. And I don't know if Dr. Zorba is familiar with that or not, but okay, bye-bye.
Great idea. Excellent, excellent thought. And what it's doing, of course, if you think about how you're hammering, if you reduce the weight of essentially what is going to go on your wrist when you move it back and forth, it's going to make a difference. So when he took away the steel shank, it actually became a lighter handle. And therefore, he wasn't moving that carpal tunnel nearly as much. And then the nerve that's in the carpal tunnel wasn't causing nearly the same problem. So the answer is great, great idea. I like it. Thank you for that tip.
Yeah, that's a good. We don't get a lot of hammer tips on the show, but that's
no, we don't. No, we don't. But every time there's a hammer tip, we always bring it out.
All right, and finally, Zorba, let's hear from a caller in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, I was listening to Dr. Zorba just a few moments ago, and as soon as he said something to Alexa on the little bit that they were doing, my Alexa turned off and started to do something else because it was being controlled by him over the radio, and I thought it was hilarious. I thought I'd tell you guys. Anyway, thanks a bunch.
I thought this was really funny.
I got to tell you, that is hilarious. Where all of a sudden on the radio says, "Hey, Alexa," and now I'm now controlling.
You just said it. You just said it now. That's going to mess up people's Alexas.
I'm now controlling.
We can't say
their
it anymore.
Alexa. That's it. Hey, Alexa, listen to public radio.
There you go. Is that going to be our new pledge drives where we just trigger everyone's Alexas? That's
right. No, no, no. Hey, Alexa, listen to public radio. Go to Venmo and give $10,000 to your local public radio station.
We are just kidding, of course.
The whole 9 yards.
We're just kidding, everybody. All right, 800-462-7413. Leave a voicemail anytime. Thanks for those caller tips. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener's question. This came to us from a listener named Chris. Chris writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, friends are saying they won't get their daughters vaccinated because the vaccines could cause infertility. Could you please fact check this and comment on your show? I value your expertise and need a response to this. From what I've tried to find out, this isn't a fact, but it doesn't seem to get as much play as other reasons not to vaccinate. My granddaughters are definitely getting that vaccination."
Vaccines do not cause infertility. And this is always been an issue, not just with that, but it's a reason, frankly, that a number of people in Pakistan and Nigeria, which basically are the two outposts of where polio still strikes, will not get the polio vaccine because they think if they get the polio vaccine, they're actually going to become infertile. So this lie, this fake news, is something that floats with the COVID vaccines too. Vaccines do not affect fertility at all. That is absolutely wrong. And that's about as strong as I can possibly put it. But I think the important thing about this is that the person who is a radio listener said, "Will you fact check this?" So they trust us for information. And that's why you've got to go to trustworthy sources when you're looking to make medical decisions that affect you or your family.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
zorba@wpr.org.
All right, more of your calls to come. We have another interesting topic to dig into, and Zorba will be answering more of your emails. So stay tuned to Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. Stay tuned to the show. You just might hear yourself. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, what's this talk about baby boomers being healthier than millennials and Gen Xers?
What do you think about that?
You tell me, where is this coming from?
No. I want to know what you think. Do you think baby boomers are healthier than Gen Xers and millennials? I'm just asking you a question.
The headline did surprise me. That's for sure.
Right, right. Well, the headline goes, I mean, first of all, come on, baby boomers. You know, when I was younger, I smoked cigarettes when I was in college for 4 years. I didn't know about fruits and vegetables. Veggies to me were canned beans, canned peas, canned this, canned that. How could I possibly be healthier than millennials and Gen Xers? But the answer is no, this might be the case. When we look at elevated blood pressure, when we look at excess belly fat, when we look at cholesterol, it turns out right now the baby boomers are better than the Gen Xers and millennials. And these are people born basically from 1946 roughly until 1960. How could that be the case when the Gen Xers and millennials certainly have more information than the baby boomers have? But this particular study looks at this very, very complex issue. What do you think?
Well, I'd like to hear the research first, and then I definitely have some thoughts here because I'm in the Gen Xer category here. So.
Well, the research basically comes from how many people are developing diabetes in that class, how many people have elevated cholesterol, how many people have elevated blood pressure. We're not going to see heart attacks and stroke because they're not at the age for that. That's really, those diseases are very, very age dependent. But as far as belly fat is concerned and cholesterol is concerned, I mean, it really is a difference. I had a guy in my office the other day, and I had not seen him for about 4 years. He had gained 50 pounds, and his cholesterol went from 178 to 245. And I looked at that, and he said, "Why is my cholesterol going up?" I said, "Well, maybe it's part of your lifestyle." And then we had a discussion. And so it appears that millennials and Gen Xers just may not be taking their health seriously when it comes to what they're eating. What do you think?
Well, that's okay. This is where I'm going to push back just a little bit. So we're going to have a little debate here, maybe. Just a heads up. I am, like I said, I'm the Gen Xer here. Mm-hmm. So just a couple points I put down when I read this article. Mm-hmm. Did this research, did the study factor in things like younger generations earn much less money historically? Wages have been stagnant.
Right.
They've accrued much more debt. College is much more expensive now than it was for baby boomers.
Right.
And of course, healthcare costs have, skyrocketed.
Right.
And then there's employers. And generally speaking here, of course, they're just not providing the same, insurance and retirement benefits than when boomers entered the workforce.
Right.
And then there's research showing millennials are reporting much higher rates of anxiety and depression than baby boomers. So there's a lot more to this story than those data points.
Uh-huh. Well, you bring up some good points, and it may be a less healthy environment psychologically, so that you automatically go to foods that are cheaper, and foods that are cheaper are generally foods that are not as healthy for you. So I think that the economic things that you're talking about definitely do have an effect, but there may also be the fact that baby boomers, because they didn't do well at the beginning of their lives, are now thinking, I've got to really catch up, and so they may be doing a better job that way also. One thing for sure, we can all do a better job when it comes to eating. And the Gen Xers, because of obesity and because obesity is happening at a younger age, I really have a factor of the fact that it's important to get on there. But it's okay. As a boomer, it's all right. I won't take it seriously.
I'm not going to say, okay, boomer. I'm not going to say that to you right now. I know my parents didn't like that when I told them that once.
It's okay, Carl. I can take it. I can take it. But you bring up the finances, the psychology, and the issues. And I think that's really important. The other thing is this. As you get older, you begin to think about your health more quite often. When you're younger, you're invincible, and you really don't think about your health in the same way. So part of this is just an age-related discipline. And I thought I would tell you, as one of the youngins.
Can I throw one little bullet point fact at
please,
you that I found
please.
From Pew Research? This one blew me away. So according to Pew Research, when baby boomers hit a median age of 35 in 1990, they collectively owned 21% of the nation's wealth. Mm-hmm. So when they use the same metric, exactly the same thing when millennials hit the median age of 35, guess what that percentage is of the nation's wealth?
No idea. None.
3%.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and we know that having more money means having more healthy food.
Right.
We know that
fruits and vegetables that are fresh cost more. That is shocking.
I was shocked.
That is shocking.
Yeah.
And you know something? That really goes to your thought about the fact that money may be a big driver of this. And I fully understand that. And that is, of course, an important issue. That's a very important issue.
All right. Well, we survived this debate. We got through it. I feel okay.
Yes, we did.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call if you'd like to leave a question for Dr. Zorba anytime. Let's get back to more of those voicemails. Here is a caller in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hello, Dr. Zorba. My question has to do with whatever the elements or melements are that are in the medications used for arthritis, especially osteoarthritis, that can damage the stomach lining or even the esophagus lining. There are warnings on these medications, but what is that element that can eat away at the esophagus? Please answer this question for me. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Anti-inflammatory drugs, also called NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. And those are basically anti-inflammatories that are different from cortisol, prednisone, prednisolone, the steroid drugs, can cause an upset stomach. They can cause GI bleeding. They do that not uncommonly at all. COX-2 inhibitors, Celebrex being the only one that's on the market, is less likely to cause a GI bleed, but it can cause a GI bleed. And that's one of the side effects. The other side effect is, especially in older people, it can also cause things such as kidney dysfunction. So any anti-inflammatory can do it. And so that's why it is the anti-inflammatory that does it. It's not something in the anti-inflammatory. It is the drug itself. Tylenol is the only painkiller that is out there that is not an anti-inflammatory, and it is safe, safe on your stomach, safe on your kidneys, but in huge doses, not safe for your liver, especially for people who consume more than two drinks a day. They have to limit themselves to no more than 2,000 milligrams of Tylenol, the generic, of course, being cheaper and just as good.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's do that segment where you get yelled at. I know you love this one.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Bring it on.
All right, this email came to us from Kathleen in Jacksonville, Florida. Kathleen writes, Dr. Zorba, almost every week I hear you recommend gabapentin. My husband took 300 milligrams once a day to rule out nerve pain. He was supposed to take it for 14 days, but we stopped after 7 days because of the horrible hallucinations. Why do you never mention this side effect? After reading the insert, it seems very common. What do you think?
Well, I don't think hallucinations are that common. It's an anti-seizure drug. Sleepiness is definitely common. And if you take it at nighttime, something called parasomnias are very common. And parasomnias are where you're in a half-dream, half-awake state. And that definitely is not unusual. But the drug is commonly used to help put people to sleep. I don't think it's really the hallucinations, as I said. I don't think they're not common. But one of the issues are with any drug such as this is look at the side effects, read it on the web. Anything greater than 10% means it's much more common. And then you see whether or not they relate to you. I think the drug is very, very useful, but not for everyone.
800-462-7413. Back to the phones we go. Here is a caller from New Jersey.
Hey, Dr. Zorba and company. I'm a 71-year-old male in good health. Have maybe just bad knees and occasional case of sarcasm. In the past couple of years, I have had this arm tremor. Doesn't happen all the time. I can go for a month or so without it, and then I will come back for maybe a couple of days on and off, sometimes as much as a week. Then it seems to go away again. I was at my orthopedic surgeon one time, and he said, don't worry about it. But that was, a year and a half ago. So I'm wondering if maybe I have to see a neurologist. I do have a herniated cervical disc, but I don't know if that has anything to do with it. Okay. Hope you guys are well. Cheers.
Before you answer, Zorba, can I just ask real quick here? Have you ever had a patient ask you to treat an occasional case of sarcasm before? And if you have, what do you do?
There is no treatment for car sarcasm.
Okay,
there is no treatment. It's one of those problems you just have to leave.
Just one day.
No, he probably has something called essential tremor. Now, essential tremor, it's kind of not really a good word, essential tremor. It's also sometimes called benign essential tremor. If you hold out your hand right now, Carl, and look at your hand. Now, okay. Hold it this way. Hold it like
this?
Palm down. Now, look at it. Does it move at all? Hold it as stiff as you can. Does it move at all?
A tiny bit.
That's right, a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Well, for some people, that tiny bit is not. It's a bigger bit. And in fact, that's one of the things that's a problem that as you get older, an essential tremor is worse when you move things. So if you take a cup and you try to drink a glass of water, if you have significant essential tremor, your hand starts to move and it's very, very difficult for you to eat because of the tremor. And for people to look at it, sometimes when it occurs, they think either you're going through alcohol withdrawal, which by the way, produces a tremor, and drinking alcohol then reduces that tremor. So people immediately think there's something wrong with you when you have it. It's very common. It comes and goes. For some people, it stays there all the time. There are treatments for it, medications for it, such as beta blockers and some anti-seizure medications. In this case, for this person, comes and goes, I would just label it as something that just occurs. And by the way, if you pay attention to it and you write it on a calendar, when you get it, you may find out it comes and goes after you do certain things. Like you go out and you have two or three or four margaritas, for example, the next day you might have an essential tremor because you're going through that kind of mini withdrawal from the alcohol that's simply exaggerating your tremor.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. Leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, before we head out, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener email. This question came to us from a listener named Will. Will writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. I want to use memory in my body to check the functionality of my body. Suppose I've been taking breakfast at 8 a.m., lunch at 12 p.m., snack at 4 p.m., and supper at 6 p.m. for years. My stomach had memories to know when I take each meal every day. I don't know how and where these memories were formed. Let us assume that there are addresses in the brain that store these memories and their connections to my stomach. Now suppose my stomach is not digesting food well. Say stomach is not able to release enough acid, or stomach is not contracting well, or other reasons. Do you think by changing each meal serving time and each meal contents, I can establish new addresses in the brain to stimulate different areas in the stomach to work on my digestion?"
Well, it's a fascinating thing. I mean, the fact is we do have certain habits. I mean, like all of a sudden, why do we like to say like at 11:30, we want to have lunch, or 12:30 or 1:30? And that's because we eat at a certain time, and it might be the gastric juices are flowing then. And changing those habits, at least certainly for me, changes with the summer. Do you eat dinner at a different time in the summer than you do in the winter?
Usually, yeah, because you're kind of doing more things outside. So yeah, it definitely swings a little later in the summer.
I mean, you're doing things outside and you're changing things. Now the cortisol levels in your body are regulated to some extent, not only by the sunlight when you wake up, but also when you eat. So the answer is yes, there sort of are addresses there. And if you change your eating times, I'd experiment, especially if you have stomach problems, and try different times to eat. You know, the idea that maybe you don't want to have a full breakfast, maybe you want to have some breakfast in the morning, but bring up a good point. I think your brain has lots of memories here that we really don't understand that well. And I think the memory is in the brain, not in the stomach, but it sends the stomach information. And the stomach goes, hey, I'm ready. Or it says, I'm not ready at this time.
All right. Thanks for that email, Will. And do you have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it on our Facebook page. And you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stay well, Zorba.
Stay well, Carl.
If you missed anything during the show, or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org, and of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. And keep visiting the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for Zorba's frequent coronavirus updates. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.